we've got Glenn Dickens. Now, Glenn was running R&D at Dolby for 15 years.
Okay.
He virtually co-invented Atmos at Dolby. He's now working for us. As we speak, he's in the room next door on the blower with Joe, trying to sort out a time alignment issue in the base integration algorithm.
Back to Not an Audiophile. This is episode 23, season 2. Today we speak to Kim Ryrie in part 2. I said it would be a week. It's been weeks. I apologise for that, but we're now back. Brad and myself speak to Kim and occasionally make little titters and comments and probably talk over each other a bit too much. We were highly enthusiastic. We'd just seen downstairs where the Dex product was manufactured. We met a number of the incredible people that are involved. And frankly, we were a little awestruck. Kim today in part two tells us really how Dex got a start, what it really is, what it does, and how Gen 4 is a significant improvement and refinement over the previous generations. This episode of Not an Audiophile, the podcast, is sponsored by Spectra Flora. Looking for gorgeous speakers that sound as good as they look? Meet Spectra Flora, Australia's newest loudspeaker innovator. Their flagship Solata 88 is handcrafted in Victoria, Australia. With patent-pending waveguide and subwoofer designs, this speaker delivers impactful, dynamic, and emotionally gripping sound. Listeners rave about the beauty and breathtaking sound of the Solata 88 that makes ordinary speakers feel lifeless. Experience Spectra Flora. Rediscover meaning in music. Learn more at spectraflora.com. Great to have you back in the room, Kim. It's been a matter of minutes since we finished episode one, and now we're recording episode two, but we're going to strike while the iron's hot. Brad Sirhan's here as well to help us. The Dex story started a lot longer ago than people realise, and as you've joked, the oldest startup in the history of startups. I mean, 96, I think you just 97.
97. Yeah. Look, the
triggered, I should say, by your from the previous episode, your amazement perhaps at how well analog active loudspeakers worked.
That's right.
And so, no doubt, there's a connection between that experience with the Auntie Jack band.
Yeah, so just to
and
recap.
And why you started Dex, yes.
Yeah, so just to recap on that story, we had a band back in the, would have been early 70s, and we had a pair of Altec A7 Voice of the Theatre speakers using the passive crossovers that come with those, and we were blowing the horns up almost every month or two. We'd blow the diaphragms up on the horn, and at the time, I had a couple of 100-watt amp modules, and someone suggested taking them active, which meant having one amp for the horn and another amp for the 15-inch woofer. And then I just built a four-pole 24 dB per octave crossover in front of each amp. And what amazed us was just how clean suddenly the Voice of the Theatres became. And because of the steeper crossovers, we stopped blowing up the horn.
Yes.
So that was my first, you know, realization of the advantages of active, especially for clarity, you know, reducing crossover distortion in particular. Because, you know, for example, with a passive crossover, you've got a 15-inch woofer. That woofer, if it's got a slow roll off above the crossover frequency, I think the crossover to the horn was about 700 hertz or something that. You know, that's still outputting nasty stuff up into 1400 hertz and higher, because it's only rolling off quite slowly. Meanwhile, the horn is upset because we're sending a lot of bass frequency to it, which it doesn't like.
Yeah.
So it's it's nearly at its, you know, X max and getting distorted and
apparently
upset.
Beyond its X max and beyond its beyond, capacity, in our case, judging by your
in our case beyond
buying
its X
diaphragms max, a dozen at a time,
the flying diaphragms.
Yes, and, that's a name for a band.
So anyway, so long story short,
yes, it is. We're talking horn diaphragms.
Yes,
so long story short, but I didn't.
But it planted a seed, obviously.
It just planted a seed. I wasn't involved in speakers after that because the Fairlight distraction went on for 20 years or something.
Yeah.
And then, but in Fairlight, I'd started using a lot of DSP.
It's another good name for a band, the Fairlight distraction, but anyhow.
Fairlight distraction.
So you asked about how we started DEX, which the original name was Clarity EQ.
Okay.
And what had happened there was, one of our programmers, a guy called Brian Connolly, had left and started his own company called Lake DSP. And Lake had...
That name rings a bell.
Yeah, Lake had come up with this headphone technology whereby they come up with some HRTFs, which is head-related transfer functions,
okay,
which is sort of how the ears work to determine where sounds are coming from.
Okay.
So each ear filters in a certain way, and if you can reproduce the way the ear is filtering by actually sticking a microphone inside the ear, creating, you know, doing a frequency sweep, an impulse sweep, I should say, you can create a filter called an FIR filter, finite impulse.
Yep.
Response filter, and you can mimic, if you just stick headphones in your ear, you can mimic the sounds coming from outside of your head rather than in between the headphones. And this was this technique that Lake had working.
Okay.
And they contacted me. I was working at Fairlight at the time, and I was sort of winding down a bit at Fairlight because by then we had venture capitalists and we had lots of politics, and I was getting a bit sick of it. And
I bet you
Brian said, "Can you help us commercialize this stuff? Because we're running out of money and we need to get investment."
Yeah.
And so I went and heard it, and I said, "Well, the first thing you got to do is make a little demo." So I wrote a little script with Q. Calling James Bond into his study to point out that the Russians were trying to get hold of this technology, which make headphones work outside of your head. And James going, "My good Lord, Q, this is unbelievable." And of course, you put the headphones on and you can hear this happen. You
know? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we ran into, we made this little one-minute demo of this, and it landed on Paul Keating's desk, who was the ex-prime minister, and Brian had met Paul out in the street, and they had a chat.
Met him in the street,
and yeah, because the office was next door to his in the city, and Brian was explaining. Because Paul politely said, "Oh, what do you do?" And he said, "Oh, we make this technology." And he said, "Oh, that sounds interesting." And Brian says, "Would you like to hear it?" So anyway, we sent up a little CD, battery CD player with headphones.
Yeah, okay.
Landed on Paul's desk, and next day he was in Lake's office saying, "This is unbelievable.
Hooly dooly.
This is fantastic.
Hooly dooly.
And show us around." And so long story short, Paul introduced Lake to a rich friend of his who invested $1 million or $2 million or something. Lake ended up going public. But meanwhile, I'd helped them do all this, and I said, "Brian, do you realise you could use this FIR filtering technology for loudspeaker correction?"
Yes.
You know, you could measure a loudspeaker like we're measuring the ear, the inside of the ear. The inside of the ear, was all it was doing was just giving you an impulse response of what the ear was doing, which amounts to the same thing as what a speaker's doing the other way around.
Yeah, but inverse effectively.
And which means you can look at what it's doing wrong and create an inverse filter for that to correct those anomalies.
Mm.
But the amazing thing about FIR filters doesn't just correct frequency response, because everyone knows, you know, all the audiophiles listening know that that you can change frequency response, and it's it might sound a bit better, or it might sound a little, the tone's a bit different. They're all very nice, but the X factor is the timing coherence. Mm-hmm. You know, is the phase linearity of what's going on, and what's amazing about FIR is that you can essentially, it's complex the way it works mathematically, but effectively what happens is that you can measure a loudspeaker's impulse response. From that, you can see the frequency groups that are actually being delayed slightly by the electromechanics of the of each transducer, the woofer and the whatever, plus the errors that are being introduced by the crossover filters, because they're not linear phase filters usually in a speaker. They're minimum phase. So, and it will delay other, you can make it delay other frequency groups so that these delayed frequencies can catch up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're only talking about, you know, probably 3 or 4 milliseconds through the mid-range frequencies, where, which is where it matters, which is where we notice timing going wrong subconsciously. We don't, we're so used to hearing it.
No, it's not like you can... hear that tweeter sound is arriving late.
Exactly. You wouldn't have a clue what's going on. And I'm talking about frequency issues, not just between drivers being out of time. Mm. I'm talking about frequencies within a driver, being out of time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the old story is, well, sound travels 1 foot in a millisecond.
Mm-hmm.
So in 3 milliseconds, we're talking about 3 feet.
Yeah.
And again... doesn't sound like a lot, but we notice it subconsciously. We notice centimetres to detect where sound is coming from. Our hearing is incredibly acutely aware
I think
of when stuff is wrong.
That's an important point, is that for people who are like, can you hear that? Well, I mean, that is sort of... these phase differences are kind of how your hearing works. You've got an ear on each side of your head for a reason.
Yeah,
And your brain's measuring the difference in arrival times to work out where stuff's coming from. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Are you looking for your tribe? Visit stereonet.com today to join one of the world's largest online communities for hi-fi, home cinema, headphones, and much more. Read the latest news and product reviews, or check out the classifiers for the largest range of gear on sale. Membership is absolutely free, so visit stereonet.com and join up today.
Well, you can tell, right? So the head's only, 6 inches wide.
Mine might be bigger than average. Brad's is huge.
So if something's coming, you know, off from 45 degrees, the difference is only inches.
Mm. Yes, yeah.
And we're picking that up.
Yeah, so if you work out the time component,
So we're incredibly sensitive.
Microseconds.
Yeah.
Well, lots of microseconds, not one microsecond. But, yeah, I mean, we're very sensitive. Yeah.
Very sensitive to that. So that's what's amazing about this technology. And so I said to Brian, why don't you use this? Why doesn't Lake do loudspeaker technology? He said, well, we're just so tied up with this headphone stuff, and Dolby's licensing it from us now. They're going to call it Dolby Headphones.
Yep.
And therefore we're going to go public.
Paul wants to get his money back.
Yeah, so that is what happened.
Paul's made it.
So, and by the way, meanwhile, they patented the way do the FIR processing. DSP.
Brilliant.
And we'd made an agreement to license their patent to do speaker correction. And so then, of course, I'd helped them get taken over by Dolby, right? So Dolby take them over. Long story short, they went public, but then Dolby delisted them and then bought the whole company out.
Okay.
And now Lake became Dolby Australia, with 200 engineers working there in the city for a period.
Yeah.
I think it's down to about 100 now, but you know, they were pretty serious.
Where are they? In this city somewhere?
Well, in Sydney.
I'm not sure where they are now, but at the time that I was dealing with this, they're in the city.
Yeah, okay.
So... But Dolby said, no, you can't license our patent. We don't want anyone to have this stuff.
Okay.
And my partner, who'd started Clarity EQ with me, or now called Dex, Paul Glendenny, said, oh, don't worry, I know another way to do this.
Oh, okay.
So I said, really? And he said, this is all mind-numbing arithmetic that I don't understand. And So he came up with a new way of doing it.
Okay.
The only difference was we had to use floating point DSP arithmetic mm-hmm. rather than the lake process. You could get away with fixed point,
yeah, okay.
which was cheaper to do back yeah, yeah. in the day with yeah. DSP. So that was our only slight compromise. We ended up patenting our version of it.
Okay.
US, we had a US patent on that. And so that's what we've been using
okay.
ever since. So effectively what we're doing is we can, well, as you know, as a speaker designer, it's not just that. There's designing speakers, there's a whole shopping list of dramas.
Right? Certainly is.
It's a really good way of putting it.
Shopping list of dramas. Yeah.
So,
you could say it more kindly and say it's a grab bag full of compromises or
yeah,
something.
But grab bag of compromises. Okay, yeah, let's leave it at that. But going active resolves a lot of those issues.
Mm.
Right, so for instance, one issue, even going active, you know, the pro speakers, as you say, have been active for many decades,
mm.
but they started off being analog active, so they were just using 24 dB, nearly universal,
yeah, yeah.
24 dB per octave, you know, crossover at 2K for the tweeter, whatever, maybe they were three-way, so they'd be yeah. 200 hertz yeah. to the woofer. But even they weren't time-aligned. Right.
No,
because what Pro Audio wanted was an accurate frequency response. They didn't really care about time alignment
no.
because what they had to be sure of is that when they were mixing stuff,
yeah.
they just had the levels of everything accurate.
Yes, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So they were totally focused, fixated
yeah.
yes, on an accurate frequency mm. response so that they knew that what went out the door
mm.
was at least mixed and balanced properly,
yeah,
and then they'd leave it to audiophiles to get their own speakers that cleaned up timing issues or whatever audiophiles needed in the
well
day.
That's right. I mean, they're only listening to it. It's not like it's part of the recording process in the sense that it's laid down or fixed in the recording. So yeah, you can,
that's true,
the customer can fix it at home with their Wilson Audios and their adjustable mids and tweeters,
yeah,
or
if
something.
They've got
yeah.
a spare $50,000 US
yeah,
you know
yeah.
so anyway, then DSP came along
yep.
for studios, for active
yes.
Speakers. And the beauty of DSP meant you could, first of all, you could go to steeper crossovers if you want, pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
Even doing steeper than 24 dB per mm-hmm. octave filters in the analog world wasn't all that easy.
No.
You'd have to really be selecting components mm. and
right.
measuring everything. It was a bit of a pain.
Yep.
Virtually impossible passive speakers.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's really explored that with a passive filter. But
no,
I mean, maybe
so
they
now,
have. Brad, have you done a sixth order passive filter?
I'm sure he has.
No comment.
No comment. How that turned out.
No.
So
no. It doesn't. It's not fun.
It doesn't roll off accurately.
It's not fun and it's not easy. It
creates
production.
Its own problems. Basically,
it does.
If you're talking about time.
Well, you've got capacitors with typically 20% tolerance.
Yeah. Oh no, you definitely.
That's,
well, your hand. Any passive filter, you hand selected components. I mean, we batch everything up because otherwise, you simply won't be building two matching crossovers for a stereo pair of speakers. It won't
yeah,
happen.
Yeah, exactly.
So you've got, so the DEX product started, and of
but
course
just, but let me just finish that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, just saying, when DSP came in,
yeah,
what they could then do was delay. At least they could time
yeah,
align.
Yeah. Sorry.
At
yes,
least
yeah.
they could then time
yeah,
align drivers,
yeah, yeah.
and they could do simple parametric EQ. So if they had a bit of a peak somewhere or a dip somewhere, they could tweak mm. it to get the frequency response better. So at least that fixed time alignment issues between drivers,
was,
not within the driver,
yeah, yeah.
but between. So then when we came along with FIR,
mm.
we're thinking, well, hang on, we can now do linear phase crossovers
yep.
because that's what FIR lets you do at any slope.
Yes.
So nor in the analog world, if you want linear phase, you're pretty much stuck to a capacitor. You know,
yes. Yeah.
Right. Single pole.
Yeah.
And if once you go beyond that, you're no longer
you're
linear phase.
Yeah, yeah.
So with our version of FIR processing, we can do steep linear phase. We can do, typically at the show we just did, we had 12-pole filter. That's 72 dB per octave. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And which means it's just virtually a brick wall.
Indeed.
Which means there's just no crossover. And
that sounds all right. Like, it doesn't.
It's counterintuitive, but it sounds amazing.
It kind of should sound amazing because, you get the best out of your driving units, obviously.
I used to think, you can't do that. You've got to have a bit of a crossover.
A bit of an amalgam.
You obviously can. You can set with our system any crossover thing. You can do 48 dB or 36 or whatever you want. But with that particular design we did at the show, we chose 72 dB per octave.
Okay.
And and then within each driver, we can correct any non-linearities within the driver itself. Okay. So you end up getting very consistent timing coherence. Mm. We're only adding milliseconds to the audio, which doesn't care. Mm. The only time it matters is if you're trying to synchronize with a video, but you can get away with about a 15 millisecond delay before video starts seeming to be out of sync with the audio. Right. That was, that's the bottom line of the advantage of going active. There's other advantages that we talked about which are inherent to any active system. One is that each amplifier is bolted directly to each speaker diaphragm.
So not only have you got rid of your passive crossover, you've got rid of cable as well.
Not necessarily, because you might have the amps externally, but what you do have
is you've got a foot of cable,
got lots of feet. Yeah. What you have done is you've only got three or four octaves worth of audio running in each cable.
Yes,
you haven't got 10 octaves fighting amongst each other, in a single cable. You've also got each amplifier only having to deal with three or four octaves.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a high current amp for your bass.
Indeed. Yeah.
You've got something for the mid range, and you could have a 10-watt class A for your tweeter if you want.
The advantages are clear, and they're immense, and yet still in the hi-fi industry, concept of an active speaker is kind of shunned a little bit by customers and dealers. People are a little bit scared of it. Why? I don't know. Because ultimately, just plug them into the wall like a vacuum cleaner and connect up a cable to the back of almost any preamp, obviously, but any AV amp, just about any audio integrated amp has a pre-out pair of RCA sockets these days. I don't know what the problem is. It's a weird thing. I guess it doesn't enable easy comparison between passive speakers and active speakers, where the passive speaker has obviously got its own power amp, and there's the saga of, how are we going to compare one with the other? And, of course, probably shouldn't, because the active speaker is immediately, in most cases, going to sound more correct, obviously. But how does your product get used? So your customers, of which you have many, you've been selling these things for a long time in their initial versions, and now you've got this new super-duper version that's almost finished beta testing, as I understand it, as far as the software is concerned.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful-looking product. I've seen it being built, parts that are inside it. This is clearly genuinely high-end electronics in every way. It's not some fake high-end thing that's got a pretty case and just garbage China spec insides. This is a serious product. Lots of processing power, but also lots of high-quality audio capability. But how does someone use the product? How do you, or what is the main use? Like, are they using it with their home-built speakers, or are they using existing high-quality speakers, a pair of Wilsons maybe?
Yeah.
Just tell us about that.
It's a really good question. So that's why we have three different models.
Yeah, yeah.
So the flagship model, which we call the Pre-8 because it's got 8 outputs, but that only means that it's still stereo, but you can have outputs for subwoofers, outputs for bass drivers, output for mid-range drivers, and outputs for tweeters, all of which would then go to their own amplifiers,
yeah,
which then go to the driver.
Yep.
So that, of course, implies some degree of DIY.
It kind of does.
You can't just go into your hi-fi shop and can I have that box and there's a pair of connectors on the back for each driver with nothing in between. Mm. So it does imply that you're going to have to do that yourself, unless, and that's what most of our users do, actually.
Yeah, okay.
They do that. They will either go and buy an affordable speaker of any kind, they will take the crossover out
of it, yeah,
and
okay.
they will bypass their internal crossovers.
So this is a question I've been meaning to ask you for a long time. So that is that what some customers are doing? That if they want a pretty box, like they want something that their partner is happy with,
yeah,
are they doing just that? Are they going getting a pair of, I don't know, a pair of 800 series BMWs? And someone will have done this, I'm sure, and take that hefty passive crossover board out of the bottom of the box and wire up all the drivers to extra terminals on the back, then via your suggested or their power amps to your DEX box. Has that happened?
Totally, it's happened.
Yeah, okay. On 800 series, I'm using as that example.
I don't know.
They're getting production quality speakers and kind of getting rid of the bits they don't need. Yeah, bypassing crossover.
Crossover.
A much easier way and simpler way to describe it. Thank you, Brad.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, look, if you just paid, I think I was just looking at an ad for Wilson Audio, talking of Wilson Audio sashes, they're like $50,000.
Yes.
You would think twice before you started ripping them to pieces.
Perhaps you might leave the crossover in situ, just disconnect the cables.
Well, I don't know where the crossover is, but I know it's probably potted in a fancy box and it's bolted down somewhere, and there's lots of heavy cables running to the drivers. So,
yeah, look, I can't speak for that particular model of speaker, but the point is, the idea is that you don't need to pay $50,000 for a pair of speakers. That's our hope. But if you've already got them and you're thinking, you feel like an adventure, you can do it. And you can do it without wrecking them. You can take things apart in a way that you could put it back together
if you
ever want to resell it.
Yeah.
But in fact, we've just introduced amplifiers for, particularly for people that want to go active, because suddenly you need, say, three channels of amplifier per speaker. And then often you might have subwoofers, but they'll already be active, so you don't really need four amps. So we've done a thing we've got the model we had at the show is called Ampi 3, and it's got three, as you know, we've been freaking around with D-class amps, mainly because for us, we can deal with D-class. Everything else is much more complicated, and you can buy amps from millions of places. But for us, we were really impressed with the new Purify line of amplifiers. So the Ampi 3 has three Purify modules in it and a power supply. And the metalwork is designed that you can actually bolt it to the back of a speaker.
It looks like you could do just that.
Yeah, so you can take out the plate that is holding the existing, say, bi-wireable connectors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Literally take the whole thing out. Then you put a rubber seal around where you then bolt the thing, so you keep the box airtight.
Yes, yeah.
And you can then just wire directly to the speaker.
Oh, so that where the terminal cup was becomes your port for getting your three lots of cable in
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
That goes straight into the Ampi
3. So like you say, you're pulling the speaker up. I mean, if you do that to a production speaker, you're really not destroying it to...
No, you're not. You can put that back later.
Yeah, you probably get it. Maybe the average consumer might get a tech to give them a hand.
You will probably have to put about four screws into the timber work to hold at the back.
Could you blue tack it on? Double-sided tape.
You could.
Actually, B-class D, they probably don't weigh that much, do they?
Oh, they don't weigh much at all.
No, so you could double-sided tape.
No, they're just quite small, but also quite small screws.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
And that would be the only downside.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
I would imagine if they're committed, they're committed. to the exercise.
Exactly. Once you've done it, you're not going to be going back. That's for sure.
Because it sounds, obviously, the sound is amazing. That's so, the point. So that's one kind of buyer for a DEX. And,
but of course, you know, you can go to Harvey, you can go into anywhere, buy a floor stander of almost any kind that costs a couple of grand pair, and you can easily do it to that, and you'll get a pretty startling result.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So let's now, of course, line up what you can do. One, you could take a high-end, what they call a high-end loudspeaker, and take the DEX and basically either design your own crossover filters with those drive units, or just simply correct it for frequency and group delay.
Yes.
Yeah. That's not, right. Not changing passive crossover.
No, you don't have to do that. No. And as you know.
So just for clarity, so the other way you're suggesting, Brad, is you don't change the speaker, you don't make it active, you use the power of the DEX to fix the issues that are inherent in the passive.
That's right.
The way that the production speaker. And two, you don't modify it. You just connect it up, use the DEX as your preamp, twiddle some knobs, well, run a measurement, no doubt, with the mic.
Exactly. And two of the three models we have now are exactly for that.
Yeah.
They're not intended to go fully active.
Yeah, okay.
They do let you do bi-amping because a lot of, say, floor standers and even bookshelves let you bi-wire them. Yeah. You're still going through their internal passive crossover.
Yeah.
So you can't change the crossover frequency that they've... But you can make them steeper. You can put another crossover on top of that.
Another one over the top.
Okay. Right?
Yep.
And typically you'll only be doing that... See, typically inside a... Let's say you've got a three-way bi-wireable speaker.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom connector will be bass.
Yeah.
And the upper one will be mid and tweeter.
Yes, yeah.
So, which has another advantage is that it makes it easy to measure the mid and tweeter together without the bass involved. You can do that separately now
with
the DEX. So you can use four channels of amps.
Yep.
You know, one driving the upper.
Yeah.
I mean, for left and right as well.
Yeah.
And so that's what you can do with the pre-4 model, which is basically intended for a full-range speaker plus subwoofers or for bi-wiring, bi-amping existing bi-wireable speakers. And that's most of the market at the moment, you know. But for people that really want to go the whole hog, you know, I'd recommend you get the flagship model. You can start off doing that with passive speakers.
Yeah.
But... you know, a year or two down the road, you might feel like, well, let's try. Or you find an old pair of speakers on eBay or something.
Yeah.
A pair of classics.
Yeah.
And get into them.
New lease on life.
And see, now the what comes with the DEX, which works with all three models, is our software, which is the key to what we do.
Yeah.
So it's all integrated so that you measure the speaker in a certain way. It tells you how to measure the speaker because it's different from a room measurement. Okay, a room measurement you measure around the sweet spot where you're going to be listening. Whereas a speaker measurement, you want to be at least largely anechoic. You don't want much room information in the measurement. It doesn't matter having some room reflections in the measurement. There's ways we suggest you'll do a sort of partially near field measurement. Doesn't matter that there's a few reflections from the floor and whatever. You'll tend to do it off axis to the speaker. You'll do it. You might say point the speakers straight into the room rather than towing them in, and you might measure them towards where the sweet spot is. In other words, you might have the microphone back, say 60 centimetres, something like that, from the baffle. So this
and
is
then at about 15 degrees or something like
something
that.
Something like that.
Back to the midpoint where you might be seeing.
Exactly, because that'll just give you a very clean, phase-accurate measurement of what the speaker is doing natively.
Not yet.
And we need to know that to be able to compensate for that.
And then okay. you gate that measurement internally, like in the...
And then, and yeah, internally the software deals with
to make it sort of a quasi-anechoic measurement. Yeah.
If you're measuring that close, you don't even need to gate it much, at all.
Midway between the tweet and if it's a two-way, you try and get that crossover stitch
and up. And it's very easy. And by the way, we have an online support thing which comes with... for free for people in the beta program which we have at the moment. We get online with them, we can run them through the software. They don't need to understand what's going on.
It's all
pretty
automated. I think that's the point I'm trying to make, is that both my own interest to understand who is likely to want to, because the product's amazing, but it is clearly designed by a very smart team of people for very smart customers is what it seems, but meaning that...
No, not technically. Yeah, but that...
You mean,
well,
they're technically savvy. They want to come through the back door.
Do they need to be?
And get...
No, they used to need to be. All our legacy products were a nightmare to use.
We had
news thousands flash. Of them, but and you know it has a 160-page manual.
Yeah,
and
so you've simplified it in because we're on version 4 now, right?
Yeah, the whole point of Generation 4 was we took the software off Windows.
Yeah.
It's now all up in the cloud,
which means
you can run it from your iPhone. You shouldn't, not for setup. But for setup, you should use a real computer if you can, just on a browser.
Yeah.
And it'll show, because that'll show you the graphs. You want to see what's going on. You don't need to see them. We can do that online with you. We can make all the decisions.
Yeah.
And that's a free service for people that are setting up. Or dealers will do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Or anyone that's even remotely savvy can do it. And the idea of the beta software program we're in now is just to get that down to the simplest possible user interface we can. Doesn't mean that if you know what you're doing, you can't get under the hood and be tweaking stuff.
Yeah, okay.
But for 90% of what people need, we can default.
So effectively, you've got a DeX which will just... you bung a pair of speakers on and that's it. You don't... There's for those who love the look, the sound...
Yeah, and you don't have to even use any correction.
Yeah, you've got all the...
And that's my next question.
That's the first level in a sense. Sorry.
Well, Andrew. because someone who just wants a very good quality preamp processor... Well, it is a processor, not surround sound processor.
DAC.
But DAC, streamer, a beautiful product that's just beautifully crafted... sounds great. They just want that. They can just buy a nice pair of speakers that they like the sound of at the shop.
Yeah.
They can only make them sound better by
getting
out the measurement microphone and letting the DeX interpret what it's hearing and then make some corrections.
Question then. So when you buy that, what might call, I don't like using the term entry level, but you do get the microphone with that.
Yes,
so
you do.
Even if you're not going to utilise that.
Yeah, because you should have the mic at least for doing room measurement.
Right.
And at least just see if you've got
some huge room
issue and you don't really know where it is.
So here's... That's right. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Kim. But there's part two, because I do sort of want to, for my own benefit, but for the listener... Zilvery was saying, we've got a DeX, we're doing this, but it's got such a broad range of skills. The other thing, of course, it does is, so you take your normal, you like a pair of, I don't know, Focal something or others, or B&W something or others, or a pair of Dynaudios or...
Or Delacords or whatever.
They don't need any correction. Sorry. So you've got...
Sorry, Andrew, that was
how
rude.
How dare you?
I didn't...
So you've got this...
I'm assuming that's the
case. Yeah. Well, we won't know until we turn the DeX on. But the point is, But you've put your Delacords in a room that's not particularly favourable. The DeX, like it's all glass and tiles. You live on the river in Queensland. The wind's blowing through. You don't want to lock yourself in a correctly treated space. Can the decks also deal with that glass and tile emporium effect, the extra reverb time and that? Because, I mean, you can't get rid of the reverb time, but does it do a bit of... Like, is room correction on the decks a separate thing? That's a separate mode. We're going to test for room correction. Because you are, because you're going to put the mic, like you said, over the listening position.
It is a separate thing.
Yeah.
And or you can... let's say you've got a bi-wireable speaker, and as we were saying, you've got one amp driving the mid and the tweeter, and you've got the other amp doing the bass. Well, the bass is almost certainly crossing over to the mid somewhere around 200 hertz, right, somewhere like that. And the room, as you know, is all about below 200 hertz, pretty much.
Well, as far as it's weird,
except when you have glass.
I'm giving you the worst possible case. But yeah, as far as the massive room modes, yes, they're under 200.
So
hertz.
you could do that bass correction by measuring from the listening position.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Right?
And effectively, not doing a speaker correction on the bass per se, because it's all about room and bass at the listening position.
Yeah.
So you can do a separate filter which will do that. Now you have to do it again if you go to a different room.
But
you can do all that. Just do different things. And it's why we have the Dexpert, we call them the Dexpert. Because people often don't know what all the options are. And it will depend on what their circumstances, what their system is, and what their room is like and everything. So in minutes, we can see what's going on and make some recommendations. And and we can control the software for them remotely if they want us to.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, yeah. So you can look, their machine is connected to their internet connection.
Yes.
And you can... And the correction files or what have you are stored in the cloud.
We would tend to use two communication things. One is we would not actually connect via their connection to the internet to their box. Typically, we can do that in the future, but we would tend to run a separate connection via TeamViewer, whereby we can literally control. They're running it on, and we can visually see.
You've got your fingers on the button, so to speak.
We can visually see the room and where they've put the microphone, and we say, "Now, can you move the mic a bit to the left, or can you come out a bit further?" And so that's the way.
It's pretty effective. That's cool.
And it gives us a very good idea. And then we see the measurements they get, and we got a very good idea just by looking at the measurements what it's going to be sounding like.
Yeah. A quick question then. Do you often get them to play around with speaker positioning, or I have to plonk them there because...
No, the wife has already decided where the speakers are going.
Or the man, really, let's be fair. Yep.
The deck box really is going to fix the rest.
An option, right? So
if it's...
It's not. If it, it's let's not call something it just for adjustment.
It's, okay, so it's, let's call it
already,
play.
As they're, Kim says, they're already in the correct spot.
Right. Okay, so therefore, that's but where the DEX comes to the fore.
If there's an option, if you've got a room dedicated, absolutely.
We
do the formulas and we tell you where the best spot, position is.
So, okay, we've got that flexibility.
But usually that's not an option.
Okay. okay.
Okay. Right. But what I'd like to do is have a quick break. I want to come back and ask you about, obviously your history is in Australia. But I don't want to ask you about the fact of why they're made here. So we'll be back shortly.
I was chatting with Jeff at Hey Now Hi-Fi this week, and I asked him, what was happening in the store. He said he had a cool bargain, really cool, that the Not An Audiophile listeners might find interesting. Lindemann Lime Tree Hi-Fi Essentials, German-made, compact, high-end, discrete components that enhance any hi-fi system. He has a music streamer with a DAC, and a phono preamplifier, all on special. Why don't you head to heynowhifi.com.au and search Lime Tree?
And we're back. We're back, folks, back with Kim Ryrie at the desk with Brad Sirhan and myself to discuss the remainder of the fine detail of the DEX Generation 4. Do you call it a a preamp DAC, or are you calling it a streamer DAC preamp, or are you just call or a DSP processor? What, because it can be used in all these different ways. What do you call it?
I don't know what to call it.
This is the problem. It does too much.
It's like, well, some people have called it like the Swiss Army knife of audio. You know,
well that's but, kind but of yeah, what it is. Yeah.
Well, as you say, it's an integrated. I suppose that's the best way to say it. It's an integrated. Well, no, only one model has an amplifier. Well, one model has an amp in it.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, it's a preamp. I guess it's got lots of digital and analog inputs.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a streamer.
Yep.
It's got high end pro end DACs in it, state of the art DACs. It's got state of the art A to D, so that we've got, and of course Dynavector wouldn't have made a custom Dynavector preamp for us unless they were happy with the transparency of the digital.
Yeah.
And it's totally transparent.
Yes.
We're talking about minus 240 dB distortion in the digital domain.
Is that right? Okay. Yeah,
in other words, it's beyond non-existent. The distortion that there is comes in when you go back into the analog domain.
Yeah.
From the DACs and so on.
So you now it's all made. The vast majority of the product of the parts is sourced in Australia, and it's all assembled here. Well, it's designed here. I mean,
I don't think that's fair to say. The electronics pretty much all come from overseas. I mean the chips. Right. Yeah. Australia make zero chips.
Well, I don't think we're making any reels of surface mount resistors either. So,
no.
So yeah, no, that's right. I guess none of it's made here. I guess there's an awful lot of assembly happening here.
Yeah, it's all fully
assembled. A lot of the parts are imported, of course.
And it's all designed here.
It's designed here. Yeah. And is it designed here? I mean, your team of people are mostly Australian.
Yeah. No, it's all designed. Yeah. We're incredibly lucky. I think, you know, over the years, that's where I have been lucky.
Yeah.
Has been to work with great people.
Yes.
And we, for instance, Jonah Rye, who's our COO and R&D manager, he and I used to compete in the old days selling digital audio workstations to America.
Yeah, you know, right.
He sold hundreds of his DSP consoles and stuff. And we've always been friends. But you know, it's interesting that the two digital audio workstations the world was buying both came from Australia from completely separate companies. You know? And
now you're working together.
And now Joe's just joined us. Yeah.
Okay.
This year, and I've been trying to get him for a while, but I'm getting old. I need someone who looks
younger.
Yeah, no, he's younger. he is younger. We've got Glenn Dickens. Now, Glenn was running R&D at Dolby for 15 years.
Okay.
He virtually co-invented Atmos at Dolby. He's now working for us. As we speak, he's in the room next door on the blower with Joe trying to sort out a time alignment issue in the bass integration algorithm.
So the pedigree.
So we've got some pretty heavy hitters.
Absolutely.
Any other film guys
in there?
Chris Alfred worked with me back in the Fairlight days. There he was working on the DAW, we got an Academy Award, technical award.
Okay.
Chris went up to get it. He's got the little golden thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for services to the film industry.
Where's that? Is that in the building?
No, that's at Chris's house.
Oh.
And
what a touch.
So we've been working together for ages. Christoph, also running Dolby, he was co-creator of Dolby Atmos. He's now with us as well, not full time, but as a pretty much as a full time consultant, and
so you've absolutely got the people you need to make this very complex product work.
That's right. And now Glenn, who I mentioned,
he's
on 120 patents.
Oh, okay.
Not many people I like
120.
That. Yeah, he's the guy who, with Dave McGrath back in the late days, came up with the first FIR patent.
Yeah, okay.
You know, which is what's made all this stuff even possible.
So what's with Australia and digital processing?
It's really an interesting question.
Yeah.
And I don't know the answer to that. And of course, Tony Furse, who was the guy that designed the original Fairlight dual processor stuff.
Yes.
You know, he's Australian. He's very Australian.
Yeah.
That's an interesting way. He used to throw boards across the room at me when I... actually, I should have told you this story. When we started working with Tony, you know, we took over his prototypes and we were making our own printed circuit boards of his stuff. And we took it over to his place and he plugged it into his machine and it blew up. And, of course, we had the polarizing key slightly out of center on the circuit board. There was like 200 connections on it.
Yeah.
And so he picks the board out of the machine, throws it across the room at Peter and I, says, if you guys don't get your fucking act together, you better you better forget about getting in business. So
that was the equivalent of the zap he almost got, really.
So Tony was a character, genius. And so we've just been... You know, we've just been really lucky to have people like that. Yeah, people like Michael Carlos, who, as I mentioned, you know, he designed the Pager music sequencer because he was a music composer. And that was what, to the Fairlight, was like what VisiCalc was to Apple.
You know, the
first spreadsheet. Apples didn't take off until spreadsheets existed. For us, that was like Pager, you know, the rhythm sequencer, the real-time sequencer, and stuff like that. So, we've just had a lot of great people. So
inventing products before they actually exist in the sense of, because you mentioned the MIDI thing, you know, where you didn't invent MIDI, but the concept, you know, you were already doing it at the Fairlight. There seems like there's a lot of that. So maybe the DEX is slightly ahead of its time.
Perhaps. Yeah, look, it is ahead of its time in the sense that audio has to go this way. It cannot not do this, because if it's going to keep improving, this is the only way to improve.
Yeah, it's a bit stuck at the moment, and it feels like
you're right. It's stuck because of the traditional hi-fi marketing regime, where you had to be able to swap components, you had to be able to just have a speaker that's compatible with this amplifier.
The art of system building or matching and system synergy. And I don't see that going away in the same way as tubes haven't gone away and books haven't gone away haven't gone away. But
it won't go away at the high end.
Where
people want to experiment and do that, and that's why we've got, you know, the pre-8 and the pre-4, where you can choose your own amplifiers and you can do all that. Whereas normally an active speaker, that's all been decided for you in advance. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's why audiophiles don't like a lot of traditional active speakers.
No.
One reason was what we were talking about, that the focus for active speakers for pro audio is to get the frequency response right.
Yes.
They don't care too much about the time domain.
Yeah, yeah.
They just need the balance to be...
Yeah, exactly. I can see a time when, an active speaker is both affordable and quite stunning in its performance, and it'll be that performance that will take some people over the edge. They'll go, wow, I love the charm factor of my system, but this is stunning. This is
You're getting towards clean that.
And the sense of space and all of the things that they want, they get a little bit of. Slightly furry with their existing system, it's a bit of fun, but the digital thing will really... I mean, sometimes it's like modern cars, right? Everyone loves an older car for style and the sound, but I tell you what, I mean, a modern car is just... It just works, and it works so well.
It is amazing.
We've
got a Tesla, and I've got a Toyota, right?
Yeah.
The thing I hate about the Toyota is having to get it serviced. Tesla... You don't service them. Just sort of go forever, and one day the wheels are going to fall off or something.
Oh, catch fire.
That's fire. But hasn't caught fire yet.
Under the command of...
No, they really do, if at all. But
No, I'll tell you another story.
It's not just that. It's just that also the Tesla is so... It's the tipping point for a lot of people that love cars. A lot of people that love performance cars and, you know, great sound and great handling cars have had their head turned by the Tesla. Maybe your Dex product is possibly that thing where people who really love great audio systems could be tipped the other way. Because yours isn't, the Generation 4 isn't actually really out yet, is it? And this is something we should talk about.
It's not formally out until...
Like it's on beta software.
We're running beta software because we want to just keep improving the user interface.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, it's pretty easy to use, but we're making it better.
Okay, so that's what that's about.
Yeah, and we've set ourselves probably the end of Q1 to have that finished.
Yep.
But once we get to that point, we have to sell the system through traditional dealer networks and international distributors, mm-hmm. and they get very expensive doing that. So at the moment,
okay,
with our beta users, with our beta members, we're able to sell direct factory, you know.
So people can ring you up. Like, we'll obviously have your website linked to from our website. People could go through the Dex website and basically just buy the product directly from you at the moment.
For the moment.
While it's still in beta testing.
We've only allocated, I think we've only got another 70 units allocated.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know how long that'll last. But yeah, at the moment, you can get them at basically wholesale price.
Wow, okay.
And the software you get over virtually every month, we have a sort of new software release. It's a bit like a Tesla. And over the air software, but by the end of Q1, I think we'll be going formally release.
Okay, so this is a little place in time at the moment where you've developed this amazing product. The software's basically done. Mm-hmm. It's been developed over the last, well, no doubt years, but it's been, people have had their Gen 4 units for a while. 6, 8, 10 months, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The software's much improved over that time with the assistance of the feedback from those users. And I guess that's part of the package deal, is that you get a better price because you're part of the R&D team to some degree.
Yeah, so we like to hear from our beta users.
Not so much the research, but the development
To give you an idea, one of our users is Greg Timbers. I don't know if you've heard of him, but Greg was running...
Name rings a bell.
At JBL. He was a lead designer at JBL for 20 years.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And he retired a couple of years ago. And he's famous in the industry. And he has had our traditional models, the HDP4. He had a couple of those. They could only do three-way active, and he needed four-way active for his system that he's got at home, which was his own Everest JBL.
I hope it's JBL's.
It was definitely JBL. And he said, you know, until I got them, I could never achieve what I wanted.
Yeah, okay.
Because they were passive speakers, you know. So we thought, I better give Craig one of our early...
Beating it.
So we gave him one of the early pre-8s. But the software was just a basket case. And,
well, you did give it to him, right?
So. Well, I shouldn't have done it. Because the trouble is, Greg is so amazing. He spent a whole weekend trying to deal with the bugs in the software.
Okay. Yeah.
And he doesn't tell you about it until later. He says, oh, by the way, there's a few problems here. And he'd written this sort of 80-page manual
on how to fix it, or what his complaints are.
But he was just saying, "Oh, look, you know, da da da." So we worked with them over the next couple of months, and then it took about three software releases before we got it all
shook the basics out of it.
But he said the new hardware makes the old system sound broken.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. So there was a sound quality improvement over your previous models. There was such an improvement
just in the... And that's why we've spent so long doing the hardware.
Yeah, okay.
The hardware we have now is our third revision of Gen 4. Mm-hmm. So we never released the first and the second revisions of the hardware. But all the beta units got got the...
Are all the latest versions.
All the latest
of hardware.
So that's production hardware.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why, you know, it's a pretty good deal to get
the... Well, that actually sounds like an exceptional deal. Yeah, I think anyone who's interested in, you know, what the hell this thing is...
Well, the only catch is they got to buy it direct from the factory, yeah, so well, they're not dealing with dealers and stuff.
But, I mean, for some people that won't be a problem. I think they'll like, yeah, I'm happy to deal with the factory. Clearly the talent is there. They know what they're doing. So, get in touch. You probably won't get Kim on the phone, but...
You never know.
But you might.
You never know.
But, I mean, and the fact of the matter
God
is...
God help you if you do.
Yeah. It could be a long conversation. The fact of the matter is that the software is largely done at this stage. It's just the tinkering around the edges that's left. I mean,
we're still doing a lot of software, but the software at the moment does work. Mm. But the new software will just simplify things.
Well, you'll always be improving. And I mean, all of those, even just the streaming functionality, will always be some kind of... you know, firmware update for that, I guess.
So the good news is, though, Andrew, I think, and not just on the horizon.
So we've got a good news story.
And we have a good news story. And breaking here today is that if I decide to buy one today, Kim, and I don't really want to, I just want to reiterate, I don't want to really play around with the thingamajig and the thingamajig. There we go.
Wow, you're really helping the story.
What am I tempted to say?
You don't want to do room correction.
That's the word I was after, room correction.
Don't want to go active. You just want to tweak the speaker a bit.
I just want to use it as a music playback device. I've got a nice pair of speakers at home.
Plug in your old CD player, which you will do.
Yeah, but you've got a DAC.
You can Bluetooth your partner's phone.
You could buy that today, couldn't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it works perfectly.
So that's what I like.
Well, the one downstairs that we saw working did appear to work perfectly. Yes,
exactly. Yes. So the point being, rolling start, in all seriousness, you could just buy one today and have that. But the bonus, it's not the steak knives and all that sort of usual thing, is you will get a microphone with that, and you will have the ability to do room correction and all
as
the other corrections.
As your interest grows.
Yeah. So that's the bonus.
Yeah, that's right. The challenge for the whole Gen 4 platform was to be able to compete with the highest end DACs that are out there,
right?
You know, just have the analog transparency top of the line, so that effectively price wise, the DAC stuff should essentially be free. You know, if you were to go buy high end streamer DACs, preamp thing, same sort of price as the recommended retail, but for now...
Sirhan Swift, bespoke loudspeakers designed and built in Australia by perfectionists. Described by reviewers as exceptional, Sirhan Swift has received numerous awards here and abroad, including Sound and Image, Best Stand Mount Loudspeaker 2024. For full information, head to sirhanswift.com.
You know, it's basically half. Yeah,
exactly.
Retail price, because it's from the factory.
Yeah, it's a hell of a deal. And what you say is probably the most important point, and that is the quality of the stuff that you're really listening to, the quality of the DACs, the way the volume control circuitry works, the normal preamp stuff, and then the quality of the streaming.
And the phono.
And the great phono stage. The point is, particularly the price you're selling it for at the moment, it's a great value for money preamp. The DAC stuff is for free. But it's always for free anyhow, because even at the price you'd like to sell through normal channels, it's, to me, it sounds... I mean, you say it seems expensive. I say no. It's
27 years worth of development as well.
I think it's very good value for money.
And may I ask what that price is? We've probably mentioned it before, for that, you know...
Well, all our pricing is in US dollars, because that's been traditionally our biggest market. About 95% of everything we've made traditionally is export.
Right.
Europe's picked up a lot lately, but we still advertise in US dollars. Yeah. So the list price of, say, a Pre-8 at the moment is $15,900 US. That's list, MSRP, though.
Yeah.
Our beta price, actually, we've only just announced that you can have not all the options in the hardware. You don't have to buy the Dynavector
preamp. Oh, right, yeah, okay.
You don't have to buy, you can add them later, though.
Yeah.
Right. You don't have to buy, say, the XMOS USB input. Mm-hmm. You don't have to buy the digital outs, which gets the beta price below $6,000 US. It's $5,950, I think it is.
Yeah.
And then it ends up at about $6,950 if you have all
with
those
the extras.
Options,
yeah.
So it's a lot down from the retail price. That's normal wholesale. See, that's the way the industry works. The reason this high end audio stuff is expensive is because the dealers need a lot of money. The importers get so much percent, the retailer beyond.
Well, they're
reason.
All doing something, aren't they?
The
distributor has to warehouse it and market it and talk.
Promote. And
And then the retailer has to spend a lot of time
educating,
talking to people.
And learning about how to use it.
And of course, that's putting true. It all on display and nicely
money.
Lit building. Yeah. So yeah.
I might add the Pre-4 are a bit cheaper than that. And so is the LS200.
Of course, right.
Sounds to me like, though, if you do buy it direct from you at the moment, that you get really high quality levels of service. You've got this Teams arrangement. You've got a team of people here to help support the product. It's not like you're left on your own to try to work out how it might work. There's a huge amount of support. So I think...
For the beta, we do directly.
Yeah.
For the beta members, when dealers start handling the dealer. we start charging.
As you should
for direct support. But the dealers would typically do the installations
for the. But for the beta program, you're getting a high level of backup service. You're getting you guys direct,
and you get the normal, warranties and all that sort of stuff.
You've got the Dexperts, and you've got the ability for the Dexperts to go in. Virtually,
and help. So, all right. Well, look. Thanks again, Kim. Thank you. Many hours of your time. Really appreciate it. The tour of the factory. We've got enough video footage. We'll have a little video up to show people what's going on downstairs. It's pretty impressive. Thanks, Brad. Thanks for your input. Lots of interesting questions. Couldn't have done it without you.
thank you, Andrew.
So, a pleasure. So,
thank you, Kim.
Yeah, thanks again. And look, anyone who's got any questions, get in touch with Kim. The details will be on our website and not an audio file. Thanks, everybody, and we'll be back soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Pleasure.
If you've enjoyed the show, and you must have because you made it this far, can you please perhaps give us a 5-star review, if that's what they call it, on the platform that you prefer? So thanks again for listening. See you in the next episode.